Chapter 3. Act 3. Something about seeing and being seen. CC1010 was good at his job. He was his master's most trusted tool, his most precise weapon. The commander had never failed a mission yet. This would be no different. CC1010 had already eliminated the cell of terrorists and traitors, the ones in the Undercity that had been stirring up dissidents and leaking information to... His head hurt. CC1010 stumbled against a wall and sunk to one knee, the black of his armor, like the endless dark between the stars, gleamed dully in the warm lamplight. He'd been ordered to dispose of the bodies in any way possible, with any means at his disposal. For CC1010, this meant cutting them into pieces and wrapping them with chicken wire and dumping them at the bottom of a trash compactor. The chicken wire would shred the bodies to pieces as they bloated and decayed, and when they were found, if they were even found, they would be beyond unrecognizable. He was still on the fifth and final body, the slight shawl with open, staring eyes. The sight of his face tugged at a memory in CC1010's recent memory. Had he met them? He'd met them with the Jedi, the traitor to the Republic, the mutated... CC1010 clutched his helmet with bloody, slippery fingers and tore it off. He gulped the stale, warm air of the Undercity down, swallowing past his nausea and vertigo. He made a raw, guttural sound, a noise of agony and fear. His master had ordered. He was to get rid of the dissidents, the traitors, the informants for the traitor Jedi. Gods, gods, what had he done? Hands up! A familiar voice barked. This was familiar. This was all so familiar. CC1010 swayed with the force of unmemory, the deja vu that pulled at the very core of him. He knew that voice. He knew that voice. He knew that... Fox? CC1010 dropped the spool of bloody chicken wire. His hands were covered in tiny cuts, the palms and creases of his fingers sliced open by the wire. He'd been careless in covering his tracks. Careless with this, too. He had failed his master, and his master had no use for a broken weapon. What? The Jedi came closer, and CC1010 swung his blaster up to waver unsteadily at the Jedi. The Kifar with the long locks, and the deep voice, and the dark, shining eyes. He knew those eyes, that voice, the hands gripping the humming green lightsaber. The air of the tight, damp alley stunk of ozone and blood. "Stay back, Jedi," CC1010 said, voice ragged. The pain at his temples was getting worse. It was swallowing his world, his vision dimming at the edges and his heart contracting in his chest. You... He couldn't breathe past the stink of the blood that slicked his hands, the front of his armor. Don't move. Drop your weapon. The Jedi moved so fast, CC1010's vision blurred, and then he was flat on his back in the muck and blood of the ground, the back of his head colliding with the pavement. Bright pops of light flashed before his eyes, incandescent and excruciating. What have you done? The Jedi hissed, voice layered with the impossible sound of his force magic. It was all tricks, mirrors, and smoke. Fox's back arched and he cried out, screamed until his voice broke and screamed some more. The barrier behind his eyes snapped in half and he screamed again and again and again, high and agonized. He couldn't hear or see. The pain had swallowed it all up. And his world had gone dark again. It felt like the end of everything. The dark felt like a living thing. Fox tried to sit up and found that he already was. Rope tugged at his wrists and ankles. He was in a cold, hard, Durasteel chair, mostly armored, and there was someone else in the room with him. "What do you remember?" Fox flinched in a rattle at the sound of Quinlan's voice. He shied away from the light when it was flicked on, turning his face into his shoulder. He tried to speak, and his voice rasped, broken and dry. Quinlan wiped a hand down the front of his face. He looked tired. Not just tired, but exhausted. Scared. "Fox, I found you with the corpses of our best informants. They could have... We were so close. They had what I needed, the final piece, and what happened? I can't help you if you don't tell me."
"He ordered me to kill them,"
Fox rasped, coughing. Claret welled up at the back of his throat, warm and thick.
I don't remember. He called me up to...
The pain behind his eyes sharpened into a stab, and Fox groaned, teeth gritted.
"I killed them. I shot them, and then I got rid of the evidence. Needed to get rid of the bodies."
Fox tilted his head back and breathed in through his mouth, out through his teeth. "Who?" Quinlan's eyes were dark with intent. "Who ordered you?"
"Lord Sidious,"
Fox rasped. The name left him like a blade to the gut. Fear bubbled up in its wake. He gasped for breath, an invisible weight crushing down on his chest. This was a panic attack. He was having a panic attack. He needed to get it together, pull it together. He couldn't...
Hey.
Quinlan stood in front of him, between his spread knees, and pressed both warm palms to the sides of Fox's face. He leaned into the touch as best he could, a low whine leaving his chest. His head hurt.
Shh, it's all right. He can't touch you here,
Quinlan whispered, pulling Fox's forehead to his chest and cradling the nape of his neck. The gold chain of the necklace Quinlan had given him was cold against his skin, thin and delicate as a prayer. "That's the second Sith Lord, the Master. He's in the Senate, Fox. How did he order you? He shouldn't be able to do that."
"The inhibitor chips."
Fox let out another whine, broken voice pitchy and high. He shook in Quinlan's grasp. The pain wouldn't let up, wouldn't stop, and he was drowning in it.
In our heads, they have chips and they control us, and he made me do it, and I couldn't stop. Quinlan, he made me kill. He turned me into a weapon.
Fox didn't even know when he'd started shouting, screaming like he was dying. Tears trailed down his face, drawing scalding lines from his eyes to the tip of his scarred chin. His voice left him in a too loud wail, like the first screams of grief after the battle.
"I was nothing to him. I was nothing, and he made me kill and kill and kill, and I was nothing more than a tool, never anything more than a weapon. I couldn't escape. I couldn't.
Fox gasped for breath, lungs stuttering. He was sobbing like a cadet into Quinlan's shirt. He didn't have any room left to be embarrassed or to shy away. There was only the burning, tearing shame, the migraine, the impossible tightness in his chest. The core of him had been laid bare again in the dark, but this time it had been against his will. It had all been against his will. There was only the shame. There was only the terror. There was only the grief.
"Your Vambrace."
Quinlan's grip tightened on the back of Fox's head, his neck. When Fox could spare a thought for him, he could only be grateful that at least someone was focused on the mission. Fox's head felt like broken glass, like clotted arterial blood and chicken wire and a gut-hook-tipped sickness. The red light. What does it mean, Fox? The Chancellor. Fox had all the pieces. He'd had them all along. It was him who was fragmented. Him who was broken beyond repair. There were pieces of him missing. He was sure. Entire swaths of Fox that had been lost to the Sith. To the tide of the blood soaking his armor. He thought, when he'd escaped the agony of Separatist capture, that it would be the last time he would ever leave pieces of himself in another's hand. He'd been wrong. It was the Chancellor. Oh, Force. Quinlan whispered the words into Fox's blood-matted hair. It all makes sense now. I need to calm the council. I need to... No! Fox shook his head, breathing unsteadily into Quinlan's damp shirt. Untie me. I'm gonna finish this. The thing in his head was broken, Fox was sure. When he'd hit the pavement, it had all come apart. His thoughts were clear now, or as clear as they could get. He was going to fucking kill the Chancellor. Fox, untie me, Fox snarled, pulling away from Quinlan and staring up at him. He couldn't see well out of one eye, and his vision was washed out. The colors of the room they were in faded and light. I'm gonna kill him. Problem solved. If I'm wrong, I get decommissioned. Fine. That's fine. It's happening anyway. But he's going to know something's wrong when I don't come back. And you don't get another chance at this. Untie me, Voss. You're not going alone. Quinlan's mouth was set in a thin, stubborn line. He waved his hand and the ropes, tying Fox down, fell away. We go together. Fine. Fox had lost his helmet and one of his spalders back in the alley. That was fine. It was all fine. His focus tunneled again. One last time. One more chance to let the blood soak his hands. Where are we? Safe house. One of mine. Well, one of the orders. Quinlan talked as he rifled around in the closet, pulling out a heavy duffel bag and unzipping it. Inside was Fox's armor. He must have left it at the guard headquarters. I had a thought you would need this. A premonition, as it were. Strange thought. Accurate one, though. More Jedi bantha shit. Fox pulled on a red and white pauldron, and then his own helmet. It was familiar and heavy and grounding. It didn't matter that he couldn't quite see out of one eye. His HUD more than compensated. The will of the Force works in mysterious ways. Quinlan was no longer cracking jokes. He was focused, sharp around the edges, and there was a heavy pommeled knife hanging on his belt next to his saber. I'll need to arrest you after this. Fine. Fox already knew he wasn't going to walk that easily. Who knew how many he'd murdered at Sidious's behest? How many he'd killed and buried and burned and bled? After. Treason was surprisingly easy to commit. Fox still, miraculously, remembered all the access codes in and out of Palpatine's quarters. The lights flickered and the walls shook at the corners of his vision. If he focused too hard on something, then stabbing pain shot through his eyes. He was, ostensibly, delivering Jedi Knight Quinlan Vos to Sidious. There was a hidden maintenance elevator at the back of the Senate Dome, one that led directly to the Chancellor's office. Good work, CC-1010. Chancellor Palpatine looked as he always did, like a kindly old man, like some Natborn's elderly grandfather. You are as punctual and reliable as always. CC-1010, Fox's, the commander's, head throbbed with every word from Palpatine, and he almost stumbled. His memories were all coming together in a great crashing wave, like the tsunamis that battered Kamino every cycle. He was still and silent, head pounding and vision blurring red, then white. Did you dispose of the others as well? Palpatine asked, eyebrows raised. Fox met Palpatine's eyes. There was nothing there. No warmth or kindliness. Only something deep and dark and ancient. Commander, Palpatine rose from his desk, sparing a glance for Quinlan. What? Fox dropped the blaster. Quinlan caught it, fumbled, and almost shot his own foot off. Fox pulled the borrowed saber off his belt, and green light filled the Chancellor's office. The Chancellor's eyes widened, and he reached under his desk. Fox was faster. The Chancellor's truncated body crumpled to the velvet carpet of his office. His head hit the floor a second later, bouncing with a muted thud and rolling to a stop. Fox stared down at the corpse for a long, long time, thoughts filled with rushing static. He swayed on his feet, and the ground rushed up to meet him. The aftermath was surprisingly easy. After the extent of the Chancellor's treachery was discovered, Fox and various guards who had been mind-controlled into doing his work, Shiny Vance and Steady Jack and Thorn and Hound and Reese and all of Fox's Vaudet, the troopers he had been made responsible for, they were pardoned, fully. The mop-up was handled by the Senators Organa and Amidala, without the leadership of Count Dooku and General Grievous, who fell only days after the death of Chancellor Palpatine, the Separatist front fell apart. Peace talks had been in progress for 10 days, yet. Fox was seeing a mind healer now, which he still thought was entirely unnecessary and very silly of Thier to insist on. The next time Fox saw Quinlan was in the temple, on his way out from the Halls of Healing, several days later. According to the Jedi Master Hian, the damage that the Chancellor, Palpatine, Sidious, had wrought was significant. Fox, after a concerted survey of the guard, was not the only one with chronic migraines, sensitivity to light, and gaps in his memory. When he took the time for it, Fox was swept away by the sheer breadth of his anger. He could have handled it if it were just Fox. It would have been manageable, even. Fox had been the closest to the Chancellor, the highest on the food chain. He would have been fine. Instead, he had to hold Hound as he heaved against sobs that tore out of his lungs and made his entire body shake when he remembered what he'd been ordered to do. He had to watch Vance wind his fingers in his hair tight enough to turn his knuckles white. He had to listen as Thier locked himself in his own quarters and tore his room apart, silent and glassy-eyed in his fury. The Jedi Order, in the wake of the revelation, had ordered their services and their homes to the troopers. Fox had accepted the former, but not the latter. He didn't think he would ever be able to live in the temple, with its reverent hush and gleaming glory. "I will see you in 10, Fox," Master Hian said. He was a slight human man, with dark, narrow eyes and long, inky hair, and the calluses of a swordsman on his hands. When he spoke, it was always in a slow, accented voice. Each of his words fell with equal weight and emphasis. "Do not forget your exercises." "I won't, Master," Fox said, bowing his head. It had felt awkward the first few times he'd done it, but Master Hyun seemed to be allergic to handshakes. "Thank you. It was good to see you." Master Hyun's eyes darted over Fox's shoulder, and a smile gleamed in his eyes, something quiet and conspiratorial. Fox, who was not and never had been as gullible as a tube-wet cadet, did not turn and look over his shoulder immediately. He waited an appropriate and dignified amount of time to turn and walk down the hall, scanning the hall and his peripherals. A group of Jedi Knights were trying to herd a scrum of Jedi cadets down the hall. They seemed to be the ones being herded, surrounded by knee-high and waist-high children that were tugging at tabards and belts and robes. Only one knight had fully given in to his fate. Jedi Knight Quinlan Vos stared at Fox down the length of the corridor. The vaulted ceiling above them made the noise echo strangely. It sounded as if an entire herd of cadets was about to bear down on Fox. One of the other knights, a tall Togruta with a chubby-cheeked Twi'lek perched in the broad space between his montrails, leaned down to whisper something to the undulating mass. "Hi, Mr. Trooper!" the cadets chorused at him, horribly out of time with each other. They were all grinning and waving at him, even as the forward half of the operation was disappearing down another hall. Fox smiled, mouth stretched strangely, and waved a stiff hand back at them. The corner of Quinlan's mouth jerked up. Then he was smiling broadly at the sight Fox must have made. He looked good, happier. He'd traded his dark leathers for tabards of a softer, more muted color, and he no longer moved like he was trying to hide an injury or three. One of the Jedi cadets broke off from the others at a determined run towards Fox, sprinting full out in that strange, flat-footed walk that so many younglings seem to adopt in their earliest stages. Fox didn't even know what species they were. They had a pair of what looked like feathery wings folded flat against their back, and a crest of long, feather-adjacent spines growing out of their head in lieu of hair. The cadet crashed against Fox's shins. He almost stumbled back a step, but that would have meant shaking the youngling free. Instead, he crouched and unwound one of their arms from around his calf. "Hello," Fox said, nonplussed. The cadet grinned up at him to reveal two missing front teeth and needle-sharp eye teeth. "Hi, Mr. Trooper." What was he supposed to do with this? What did he say? What did he do? There was no precedence for this. There was no reg manual. "Yellon," Quinlan crouched and plucked the child from Fox's grasp, slinging them unceremoniously over one shoulder. The piercing shrieks of delight that followed signaled that this was a joyous and long-awaited occurrence. "They're no trouble," Fox said, gripped by the baseless urge to shuffle his feet and twist his hands in the hem of his civvy shirt. "Lon is always trouble," Quinlan said, bouncing them up and down one broad shoulder. He started up again at the same time Fox did, resulting in an incoherent blurt of sound. Fox stopped, opened his mouth, and closed it again. "Yeah," Quinlan said, nodding. "Right, yeah." "Yeah," Fox heard himself say from far away. He turned on his heel, rubbing at his chest to ease the lingering ache housed in the cage of his ribs. "Fox," Quinlan called out. Fox didn't turn, but he paused just for a moment. "It's good to see you again," Quinlan said. Voice quiet, even as it echoed through the great, blinding hall. "Yeah," Fox said. "You too." Quinlan found him on the roof of the guard headquarters that night, which had been turned into the Coruscanti Embassy building for the Vode. Kote was spearheading the talks for independence and full rights and a pension, whatever that was. Fox was happy to stand back for once, let Avod handle things. His head still hurt sometimes, but it was such a small hurt compared to everything else in the galaxy. Fox couldn't see as well out of his left as he used to, and when there was a cold grip of a blaster or a knife in his hands, his fingers twitched and trembled. The night was dark and the sky was endless. The light of Coruscant burned all around him. Fox thought that if a clone could ever be at peace, then this was the closest he would get. They sat in silence for what felt like hours before Quinlan spoke. I brought you something. He laid a small box on Fox's leg, balancing it carefully. Thanks, Fox said dryly. He stared down at the box, heart beating double time in his chest. Quinlan always brought him gifts for some reason, so this was ostensibly standard operating procedure. The box was strange, sure. Quinlan rarely brought him packaged goods. He was just like a magpie, but worse. Inside, when Fox brushed the lid open with careful, calloused fingers, there was a hand-braided leather bracelet. The ends of it were capped by the same golden cuffs that Quinlan often wore in his hair, and it was adjustable. Made it myself. You can tell because of how perfect it is, Quinlan told him, nudging Fox's shoulder with his own. Fox picked it up carefully and held it between two fingers. The leather was butter soft and worn, not stiff or brittle. He held it out to Quinlan, pushing up his sleeve with his other hand. Quinlan took the bracelet from him and tugged it over Fox's fingers and broad knuckles, then settled it just over the point of his wrist. When he pulled the ends, it tightened to fit perfectly. When he was done, he didn't let go of Fox's hand right away. He pressed a kiss to the back of Fox's wrist, just over the bracelet, slow and indolent, as his eyes flicked up to meet Fox's. Something hot and heavy pulled taut in Fox's chest, just behind his breastbone. Is there something in the Jedi Code against avoiding hard conversations? Fox asked. Like fuck was he going to let Quinlan off the hook just because the Jedi had beautiful eyes, or because he looked at Fox like Fox was the only person in the world, or because Quinlan was so insistent on giving him things when Fox hadn't even owned himself? Quinlan's mouth twisted. Fox felt a small and utterly justified stab of vindication. Quinlan's throat moved as he swallowed, and he kicked his heels out over the open air, gaze distant. I don't talk about the things that matter. I should. I know I should. But I don't. It's easier to ignore them or talk over them. It's like I got into my head, he chuckled, rubbing at his chest self-consciously with the heel of his palm. I got it into my head that if I was annoying as possible, as rude as possible, then I would have no one to blame but myself when people left. Because they do. People leave. And I... Fox laid a hand over Quinn's shoulder, feeling warm skin and muscles shift under his palm as Quinn brought a hand up to cover Fox's. It felt like falling, Fox thought. Giddy. He was allowed to touch Quinlan now, and to invite the touch back. It didn't have to feel like a shameful, secretive thing any longer. I couldn't, can't handle that. The thought that people leave because I don't give them a reason to. Quinlan blinked twice, eyes going glossy in the dim dusk. Because then it'd be something I can't help. It'd just be because of who I am, because the way I am. So I bite and I kick and yell so I feel justified, so I can say that I did it on purpose, that it wasn't just because... Quinlan swallowed again, face contorting. Because there's something wrong with me. Little gods, this man was so... Quinn laughed. He threw his head back and let out a jagged, ugly sound, teeth flashing white. Stupid, right? No. Fox squeezed Quinlan's shoulder again, dug his thumb in, and rubbed a little circle to loosen the tension in the muscle there. Quinlan was warm and solid at his side. It felt familiar, like his armor. It's not. It could be. A little. Quinlan rubbed at his throat, gaze far away. What I'm trying to say is, I'm sorry. You were right. I usually am, Fox said. Yeah. Quinlan cleared his throat and turned to Fox, finally, eyes shining with the reflection of 1,000 distant lights, 1,000,000 burning stars. I love you too, Fox said, feeling like a great weight had been taken off his shoulders. Quinlan. Fox, Quinlan whispered, close enough that his nose was brushing Fox's. I know. The kiss, when it came, was as gentle and endless as the night. Quinlan's hands were burning brands against Fox's throat, his hip, then the space between his shoulder blades. Kota had been right, Fox thought, aching and helpless. This was a love that felt like starving to death. The end.
If they had dogs and they had to put them down. Oh my girl, somewhere barking in the clouds with their dead pet friends where the love don't end. I don't even care what my best friends are doing. I'm in bed with the devil and I kinda need a drink. Let's take a shot of holy water, lay it on the whiz. I'm a bad dream, baby, and I'll never go away. I'm a bad dream, baby, and I'll never go away.
If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening. Podficker's notes. That moment when you are in the final chapter of a 17K podfic, and you get the description of a character's voice as deep when you have been recording them with a light, flirty voice the whole time. Yeah. Fun times. We're just going to ignore it. So, yesterday I recorded 3 chapters, 2 and then a short one, of my whip. And then I think that was Saturday. And I think probably on Friday I had talked a lot at work or something through a mask. Anyway. Basically, my voice is kind of shot right now. Which I don't think is really coming through mostly. It probably came through a little bit at the beginning of this podfic. Because of course I also did this all in one go. But like, I will say having a voice that's like on the edge of shot, like I can keep it in a place where it's not. Also it doesn't help that I'm narrating this like right on one of my breaks basically. Doing that, like podficking with a voice that's sort of on the edge of shot. I try not to do it too often. But some days it's just, this is the right thing, right? Anyway, not great for narration. Gotta keep it, like, trying to do it, you know, for narration. Fantastic for someone having a breakdown. Because when the text talks about them, like, in this specific instance, Fox's voice, like, being pitchy and breaking and gone. It's like, guess what? I can do that perfectly. So this pig holds a special memory for me for ITPE 2022 because so this fall has been a really busy time for me. I'm in school full time and working like 20 hours a week. It's a lot. And I didn't know sort of how much I was going to get done. I still don't know how much I'm going to actually like be able to do. For ITPE, but I got like, I was assigned lattice frames. I read her letter and then, immediately thought of, what is the, anyway, the Wen Qing fic that I podficked, the one where, anyway, I won't spoil it. But I did a Wen Qing one, and from Mo Dao Zuxue. And that fic had been on my to podfic list for probably like half a year, if not more. Oh, it's called With Surgical Precision. Like ever since I read it for the very first time, it has been on my to podfic list. But I had just not gotten around to it. Like, it was just like, is this really? And then I recorded it for, I was like, this is perfect. It looks like something like that Lattice Frames would want. It's perfect for me to record. So I recorded it, and there's a lot of murder in that podfic, in the fic. And I couldn't remember when I was recording it and immediately after, because did I, you know, cross-reference the letter? No. But I couldn't really remember whether Lattice Frames was okay with that or whether Lattice Frames was the kind of person who's like, no murder, please. Like graphically depicted murder. So I was a little worried because it's a really, really, really good fic. And then, so I had sort of skimmed through the first couple pages of Lattice Frames' bookmarks on AO3. And found this series and read this series and was suddenly like, oh, no, murder is totally fine. Because this series is, it has a lot of graphic murder in it. And so, yeah. This I hold a special place in my heart for this fic because it reassured me that this other fic that I really wanted to podfic for Lattice Frames was a perfect fit. Author's notes. But soul, you say. 1,000 milligrams of caffeine is still a fucking lot of caffeine. I know this. Thier knows this. But he would never set a limit that Fox could not sustain.